Hey guys, with sports betting season in full force with football here, you need a sports book with integrity and longevity like BetUS. You may already know this, but BetUS has been pioneers in the sports book industry for almost three decades, thriving and paying their loyal customer base. That is BETUS.com, and they have loads of bonuses. Join now or call 1-800-69-BETUS. That is 800-MY-BETUS. You receive 125% sign-up bonus by using bonus code SST125. That's SST125. They have re-up and referral bonuses. Also, BetUS is known among America's favorite sportsbook for lots of reasons. Bet on team and player props, loads of NFL futures, UFC matches, PGA golf, live betting on most sports. The online casino has hundreds of games. The Racebooks has all the horse tracks. They have every bet type imaginable. Follow my lead and get your phone, online, and sports betting partner with integrity and longevity like I did. BetUS. You bet, you win, you get paid. BetUS.
In the South, it's always college football season. And the king of college football reigns supreme all year long. Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
Hour two. Chuck Oliver Show on a Friday. I appreciate everybody getting in today. Wherever it is you're listening, it'll be, we got about 2 weeks from now. I think it's 2 weeks. We're going to go to 55 sticks every single day. So we started with zero sticks. We're supposed to have one the first day. We didn't have any. Satellite issue. Like I did, I talked for 2 hours. Nobody heard it. Second day we did the show, we had one affiliate. And then we've grown from there. And so now it's 7 years and a little bit later. And this is where we sit. So I'm excited about that. Knoxville, Tennessee, back on. That is pretty groovy. So that's awesome. So I appreciate everybody putting that in play. Everybody behind the glass, everybody behind the scenes working and making that occur. Let me go ahead and get everybody up to date.
Everything you need to know about college football every single day. This is CFB 365.
Headline, more running back injuries for UGA, and that is plural. Tailback Kendall Milton, the team's third leading rusher, could be out multiple weeks after injuring his MCL in practice on Wednesday. That's in addition to Kenny McIntosh, who has missed two games with a hamstring. So you've got James Cook, you've got Zamir White, and then you've got a redshirt freshman from last year is what his classification would be, although he played, and he got some run, especially against South Carolina, Dajon Edwards, and he'll get action as well. But Kendall Milton is thought of as the most talented kid there, but he's going to be out for more than a minute, and that, of course, is going to include the Florida game coming up as well. So that is too bad for them. Headline, Texas linebacker Ellinger died of accidental overdose. This is just terrible stuff. Jake Ellinger, Texas linebacker, passed away in May. Family announced yesterday death was caused by an accidental overdose of what was believed to be Xanax laced with fentanyl. He's the younger brother of Sam Ellinger. 20 years old, accidental overdose, Xanax laced with toxic drugs, including deadly fentanyl. Texas linebacker, Prince. Texas linebacker, Tom Petty. I mean, it doesn't matter, all right? Fentanyl is, and it's just one of many. It does not discriminate, man. Dangerous, dangerous stuff. Headline, and I'm going to say for now, headline, UNC lands five-star offensive tackle recruit for 2022 class. There's a kid named Zach Rice, five-star offensive tackle. He is part of next year's class. And he is committed to North Carolina in football. He's not going to North Carolina, in my opinion. Just my opinion. I don't have inside information, but this is not a profile of a kid who goes to play offensive tackle at North Carolina. Now, it's what Mack Brown is trying to create, and there's going to be a first if there's ever going to be a second. Jahmyr Gibbs, I said up until signing day, that kid doesn't sign with Georgia Tech, he goes to either Florida or Ohio State. He went to Georgia Tech. Zach Rice, he had his finalist Alabama, Ohio State, Notre Dame, Virginia, and North Carolina. He goes to three of those schools. He doesn't go to Virginia. Nah, he might. He didn't go to North Carolina. That's where he's committed. And God bless him and the Tar Heels and Mack Brown and everybody involved. Lord knows they could use him. But that kid doesn't go there. Consider yourself up to date. Okay, we are going to take a quick break, come back, and talk more college football on this Friday.
The king of college football, no matter where you go, with a new Southern Sports Today app. Catch the best college football conversation in the South everywhere with the SST live stream and daily podcast. Download it now at the App Store and the Google Play Store. Now more of the best college football talk in the country. It's the Chuck Oliver Show.
I would bet that our next guest is going to be in Oxford tomorrow afternoon when LSU knocks on the door. But he's not going to, and I hate to say this because he's a very nice guy and I enjoy his insight. He's not going to be the most interesting visitor, not by a sight. That's going to be a young man with a lot of hair. Arch Manning, if I had read correctly, and I made a note earlier in the week that I believe Ole Miss, and by the way, Ole Miss really is kind of in the mix. Like Duke is listed. He ain't going to Duke. Okay. That's the Cutcliffe. Let's throw him a bone. There are five schools that, by most reasoning, are sort of really in the running. And by my opinion and my understanding of reading folks who do this full time, Ole Miss really is in the running for Arch Manning. And remember, he's still a year down the road. So, but he will be on site tomorrow in Oxford, as well as Nick Suss, who does a tremendous job covering Ole Miss for the Clarion Ledger. Nicholas, how you doing today?
I am doing well, and I will be in Oxford, and I do also have a lot of hair, but I do think that Arch is definitely the more interesting of the two. I'll give you that.
Yeah, and it's a rock star coming to town. I have seen him on his official visits at other places, and it's a lot of the other schools that like Clemson, Bama, Georgia, Ole Miss. There are certain schools that I look at as more real than others. Give everybody the lowdown on Arch. We'll talk the game. I swear we will. We'll talk this year's team, but let's talk Arch Manning because I want to get that out of the way because that's what the broadcast will lead with tomorrow.
Yeah, and I think the one thing that Ole Miss has that these other schools don't is this will be the first time Arch Manning is taking a visit where his name is painted in the end zones because he is taking the visit that coincides with his uncle Eli having his number retired on Saturday. And it is Manning week. And Archie's going to be here and Eli's going to be here. The whole family is being honored. The road the stadium is on is Manning Way. The football center is named the Manning Center. The speed limits in this town are 18 miles an hour and 10 miles an hour to honor Eli and Archie. This is his homecoming game. And that's the thing that Ole Miss has over everything else. I mean, I talked to Cooper over the summer, his dad, and Cooper pretty much said the one thing that Arch wants to hear from schools is X's and O's. He wants to talk about football. He wants to talk about scheme. He wants to talk about what he'll be able to do in an offense. And that's the thing that's going to sell him more than anything else. And when you look at the scheme that Ole Miss has been running, I think that's what keeps them in the picture. Is you look at the numbers Matt Corral's putting up, you look at the success Lane Kiffin has had with quarterbacks dating back to Carson Palmer and Matt Leinart at USC. I think that is, if Ole Miss has a saving grace other than the fact that Arch will show up and his name will be on every building on campus, that's the saving grace is the scheme.
And let's talk about head coaches who in the SEC, any job, Friday night in the middle of Arkansas, it doesn't matter. You're motivated to win. But given all of the dynamics of these games and the relationship between the two coaches who are real good friends and go back decades, this is an intense game for two programs that I don't expect to be really in the mix for anything substantive come December or January.
Yeah, it's going to be a fun game. Ole Miss obviously has a lot to play for. It's hard to count on Alabama to lose again and you to win out to get to Atlanta. I mean, it's still on the table. But the thing about the coaching relationships and the rivalries, this goes on 4 weeks in a row now where Ole Miss played Alabama and there was all the Kiffin saving.
Yeah.
And then Ole Miss plays Arkansas, and the two offensive coordinators in that game were brothers-in-law. And then Ole Miss goes to Tennessee, and absolutely nothing of note happened, and we don't have to talk about it. And then it's Ole Miss LSU, and you have the Orgeron Kiffin joke. I mean, it's hard to play a game in the SEC where Lane Kiffin doesn't have connections just because of the kind of long tentacles he's touched throughout the SEC in the last 13, 14 years. But when you're talking about the importance of this game, yeah, I mean, it's two teams trending in opposite directions meeting in the middle. Ole Miss is a team on the rise trying to prove that it can beat the best of the best, and LSU is a team on the slight decline trying to prove it's not falling off of a cliff. And they've got so much to prove with how are they going to perform these last five games under Orgeron, and Kiffin obviously has to A, prove that proof of concept is working at Ole Miss, and B, kind of show that he can win if he truly wants to move on. Obviously, there's a lot of smoke about the LSU job and the USC job and all of that. The one thing Lane Kiffin hasn't done continuously throughout his career, I should say consistently, is win. He's done just about everything short of win conference championships and go to the playoff. And obviously, that's still a bit of a pipe dream at Ole Miss in year two. But when you have the talent he does at quarterback and the offensive numbers they're putting up, there's a position to win a lot of games this year.
Continuing with Nick Suss from the Clarion Ledger, Matt Corral, to hear Lane Kiffin tell it on Sunday and Monday, it's like he fell off the top of a mountain. How is his health now?
I would be stunned if he doesn't play. I think that the question is a lot less about will Matt Corral play, and it's more how healthy will he be. He's a guy who ran 30 times at Tennessee last week, and that's not a thing he should be doing, and Ole Miss knows it. And if it wasn't for the circumstances of how close that game ended up being, I don't think he would have run close to 30 times.
And stop trying to truck safeties.
Yeah. He took a lot of hits, and he's a brave player. He's got a lot of that Joe Burrow in him, or that Baker Mayfield in him, of just the competing until he breaks, and he almost broke against Tennessee. Yep. But yeah, if you take that aspect out of his game, I still think that he's going to scramble. I still think he's going to tuck and run for a couple of yards if there's nothing downfield. That has been his growth this year, if he's not turning the ball over because he's not forcing balls into double coverage when things aren't there. Maybe that leads to a couple more throwaways, a couple of more slides. I don't know. But I think that if he's healthy, even if he's 75, 80% of himself, the offense will almost certainly still continue to run at its 81 play per game pace or whatever they're averaging, and they're going to move fast, and they're going to try and put some pressure on an LSU secondary that's really banged up.
How healthy is Ely?
Ely, that's kind of been tricky to tell because I don't think he was 100% last week, but he got five or six carries the year before. The week before that, he obviously didn't play against Arkansas, and the two guys behind him, Parrish and Connor, both ran for 100 yards. I think that they need him to compete. I think he's the most dynamic runner they have. But if the worst thing about this offense is that Ely isn't going and they only have two competent running backs and Corral, that's really not the problem. The problem is the depth at receiver right now, with Jonathan Mingo still banged up and Braylon Sanders kind of being, I think it'll end up being a game time decision, but I don't know how much pain tolerance he has for this injury. Between those guys, Caleb Warren at left guard, Chase Rogers at tight end, a lot of injuries on this Ole Miss offense. Kiffin compared it to coaching at USC in 2010 and 2011 when they were on probation and didn't have any backups. So that's what you got to watch out for.
Yeah, Dannis Jackson, you know, he took forever and a minute to make his mark, but it looks like he says, I'll take advantage of some additional snaps. Is there a chance that John Rhys Plumlee takes advantage of snaps being available at least?
Yeah, I think that John Rhys Plumlee is going to get some looks. I think Dannis Jackson will get some looks. Jakur Pearson was a guy who got open a ton last week, just dropped almost every pass thrown to him. So if he can be a little more sure-handed, I think he'll end up being a dynamic option out there. I think you're going to see a lot of those swing screens to Snoop Connor and Henry Parrish and perhaps Jerry and Ely. I think if Ely's healthy, you'll probably see him in the slot a little bit like you did against Alabama and even a little bit last week against Tennessee. And then we'll see how much the tight ends can get involved, because last week was the first time that Casey Kelly really got some prolonged exposure after his off-season knee injury. And he was great down the stretch last year. So if he's inching closer back to healthy, maybe that's a weapon that this Ole Miss offense hasn't had this year.
I was told pretty consistently that Snoop Connor was his big power back. He has good straight line speed. Good enough.
He does. I talked to him about this week, and he pretty much said, yeah, just keep underestimating me. It works to my advantage. I think his exact line was, all I know is I've never been caught in the open field. And, I mean, for a guy who was a high school quarterback, if you want the funnest of fun facts, he was the high school quarterback at Hattiesburg High when John Rhys Plumlee was the quarterback across the road at Oak Grove. And I was at a game where they started against one another. It was a sight to see. But, I mean, for a guy who was a quarterback most of his life, came in, transitioned as a power running back. By year three, he's leading the SEC in rushing touchdowns. And I think that I did the math. I think 15 of his 22 touchdowns have come from inside the 4-yard line in his career. He really is that bruiser. But he has an 84-yard touchdown to his credit, a 51-yarder, a 33-yarder. He can break free when he needs to.
You know, my first coaching job was at a Class A school in Alabama. And it was K through 12. We ran the veer. You know what we did? We got, who's the best athlete? All right, you're the quarterback now. Yeah. Like Cam Akers. Like, all right, who's the best? All right, Cam, you're the quarterback now. That's just what you do, isn't it, on Friday nights?
Yeah, and the funny thing is Snoop might not have been the best athlete on that team. There were three SEC guys on that team, but he was the guy for the job, and they were excellent in the same way that Plumlee's team went to the state championship that year with him at quarterback. I mean, when you have an athlete like that, you don't need to have Arch Manning to win a lot of games.
Don't overthink it. I used to say, man, it's Friday night and we're in real town, Alabama. Let's just mash on these kids. You run the veer or the wing tee and you put the best kid at quarterback and you just run over people. That's what high school in the South. If you can do it, you do it. Nick, appreciate it as always, brother. Thanks for coming on, man.
Happy to help, man.
All right, Nick Suss again from the Clarion Ledger. That's just what it is. Who's the best athlete? Well, you're the quarterback now. What was it we were talking with? One of our good friends out in Arkansas. I can't remember what it was. It was a couple of years ago. And I was talking about Cruton. And the number one ranked player in the state was like a 4-star either tight end or defensive end. I think he's a defensive end. And so I was asking whoever we were talking about the recruiting, and I was like, oh, the number one kid, and again, it's Arkansas. And so every so often you look in North Little Rock and there's like, who's this Darren McFadden kid? And he's got like 6 stars. But that's not what it is most often. Number one kid in the state was this like 6'4", 245-pound defensive end. And I was saying, what's his game projected to the next level? He's like, well, actually, he plays in a Class A school and he's a quarterback. Why? Because you only have one, if I'm remembering the dimensions, and they were close. Because in a rural Arkansas or Mississippi or Georgia or Florida or South Carolina, whatever, or Idaho, you're going to have one kid who's 6'4", 230, and you know what you're going to do? You're going to put him a quarterback and you run the veer. Or the wing tee. Or maybe the power eye. And I bet you there are two teams left in America that run the power eye. It's the wishbone. No, it's the opposite of the wishbone. Power eye, you have two fullbacks and one pitch man. It's a fabulous offense, I promise you. And if you saw it, if a team came out in the power eye tomorrow and you're watching a football game, you may pause the television. That's illegal. Throw a flag. That's illegal. Because you haven't seen it in so long. That's just what you do. And so Snoop Connor, 5'10", 220 pounds-ish, plus. Well, actually, he was a quarterback. Of course he was. Would have done the same exact thing. Why? Because it's Friday night, not Saturday.
Another great weekend of pro and college action. And let's get a look at the odds. Brought to you by BetUS. Hi, I'm Dan Matthews. Let's take a look at those lines. How about we start with LSU at Ole Miss, 3:30 kick just outside the Grove. Rebels favored by 9. They are minus 350 money line. Tigers are plus 290. Over under is 76. Clemson at Pitt. Panthers are the home favorite at minus 3. Pitt is minus 155 on the money line. Clemson is plus 135. Over under 48. Alabama hosting Tennessee. Crimson Tide favored by 25. Over under is 67. Ohio State is at Indiana. Buckeyes a 21-point favorite. Over under is 60 and a hook. USC and Notre Dame for a night game in South Bend. Irish favored by 6.5. They are minus 260 money line. Trojans plus 220. Over under is 57.5. Let's head to the pros. The Bears are at the Buccaneers. Tampa Bay, 13-point favorite. They are minus 750 money line. Chicago plus 550. Over under 47. Monday night, Saints at the Seahawks. New Orleans, a rare road favorite. 4.5 for this one. They are minus 220 money line. Seattle plus 180. Over under is 42.5. How would you like to earn some money? Just by signing up for BetUS. Enter a couple of promo codes. How about SST125? With this promo code, BetUS is giving you 125% on a sign-up bonus. For example, your first deposit, $100, you're getting an extra $125 in your pocket. You're using cryptocurrency? No problem. Enter the promo code SST220. When you do this, you get a 200% sign-up bonus on crypto deposits. So if that first one is $100, you're getting an extra $200. That's a look at some of the odds from the weekend coming up in football, brought to you by BetUS, America's favorite sportsbook for over 25 years.
Now more college football talk with the king of college football. It's the Chuck Oliver Show on Southern Sports Today.
All week, all year, it's all college football on the Chuck Oliver Show. 9 states, 55 sticks. Dealing it out 2 hours a day. Been doing that since 14. I appreciate everybody making that blessing possible. If Kentucky is the closest program to UGA in the division, like I believe they are as of today, like right now, bird's eye, maybe a different conversation, but right now, sure, Kentucky. Boy, it's really good to be a Georgia Bulldog. I mentioned this yesterday. Kentucky has never signed a single five-star defensive lineman in the history of the recruiting era going back 35-plus years. Never signed a single five-star D lineman. In 30 minutes yesterday, Kirby got commitments from two. So that's who you're competing against. And specifically, the reason this position group matters, there are two things about defensive linemen. And the one thing I have never ever – I've heard coaches talk about, how do I get the ball to all my receivers? How do I make all my running backs happy? You know, the one thing I've never heard a coach say is, what am I going to do with all these defensive linemen? I just got too many defensive linemen. There is your difference in programs right there. And I've got to compete against that guy, and I'm the closest to competing with him? Folks, there's your measuring stick for the SEC East. Mark Stoops looks at this because he listens on the app, I'm certain. And he says, and I'm the closest to Georgia? And he got more in half an hour yesterday morning than we've gotten in the past 3.5 decades. Want to welcome on right now from, well, from his own show, the J-Boy Show. Very good friend of mine and just a really good guy. Love good things happening to good people. And he's mobbed up with Colin now. It is Jake Crane. Jake, how are you?
Hey, Chuck. I appreciate it, man. Appreciate y'all having me on. Obviously, the respect is mutual. And you make a great point about Georgia in the East. It's good to be king right now.
Yeah, talk about that element of just the big guys who can move. That, to me, has always been the separator. And Georgia, I mean, it's playing out literally on the field, on an SEC field. It's playing out right now. Georgia has better and more, and that defensive front, really, if you want to talk about the whole unit, just talk about the dominant nature of them this season.
Yeah, well, you know, you talk about up front. We say on the show all the time, the game's won and lost up front. I don't care what type of scheme you run, from triple option to air raid to fun and gun or whatever. And I challenge anybody to tell me the last team that won a national championship or went on a run that wasn't good up front. You're going to be looking for a while because that team doesn't exist. But when you look at Georgia, and you look at the way that Georgia and Alabama have really separated themselves when it comes down to it, it is up front. You know, there's a lot of guys you can go get in the Sun Belt. You can go to the MAC. You can go to some of these smaller conferences, the American. And there's a lot of skill guys that could come play in the SEC and be good players. There's a heck of a lot more running backs and wide receivers and DBs walking around than there are offensive tackles that can stay in front of some of these edge players. And Georgia's just monopolized a lot of them. and that's the race to first. Because you've seen when you're dominant up front, you can score any which way you want, but what it does is it gives you balance. And I'm speaking about offensively right here. But then you look on the defensive side of the ball and being able to create pressure with just four and then have all the NFL athletes in the back end to be able to mix coverages and pressure when you want to, but not because you have to. And when you don't have to manufacture pressure on defense and when you're able to be balanced with a solid run game, when you can line up and get third and two and fourth and one and control the game, you're going to win most games. Because at the end of the day, most teams lose games. They don't win them. And we've had multiple Georgia players on this week. Got Jamari Sawyer coming on today. And it's talking about winning the games the way they want to win them. Georgia wants you to walk into the classroom or walk into the hallway. They're going to walk up to you. They're going to grab you. They're going to shove you in the locker, not say a word, and just close it and walk away. And you play Georgia right now, and if you're Kentucky physically, you were somewhat matching them up front, I thought, pretty well. Against the run, at least early. They popped a couple with Zamir, but then all of a sudden you look up halfway through the third and you're like, wait, we're down 28-7 or we're down 24-7. It's like gravity. They're always there.
Let's stay in the East. It's a limited slate this weekend in the SEC East, but Tennessee going on the road, as we always know, third Saturday in October. And I have been really impressed with Heupel and all the kids that stayed in the program and how they have played at least to this point. They got some Saturdays ahead of them, including tomorrow night. But just to this point, give me your flyover of the Tennessee program so far in year one.
Yeah, you know, I think Coach Heupel's done well. If you look, they really haven't beat anybody that they weren't supposed to beat. They look good against a Missouri team that outside of Vanderbilt's probably the worst team, at least defensively, in the SEC. They beat a bad South Carolina team that hung on and beat Vanderbilt in the last seconds last week. But here's my thing with what the system Josh Heupel runs. It can work. It can, but they don't have the depth on defense right now, or really the talent on defense right now, to be able to sustain stuff all the way through the game. Now, last week against Ole Miss, if you look at Ole Miss, they're as beat up as anybody. I mean, Lane talked about it before the game, after the game. Braylon Sanders goes down during the game. You know, because last year with Ole Miss, I don't want to digress too much, but you had Kenny Aboah, you had Elijah Moore, you had Braylon Sanders, you had Jonathan Mingo, who broke his foot a couple weeks ago. That's why Matt had to carry it so many times. But I think Tennessee's going in a good direction. But until I know what the NCAA is going to do to them, I can't really make a judgment on it either way. And if you're a Tennessee fan, outside of throwing stuff on the field, that's the only other thing you're waiting on right now.
Wrapping up, Jake Crane from The J Boy Show. Follow him on Twitter at J Boy Show. He's dealing out college football conversation as well every single day. Now at the College Hall of Fame, am I correct with that?
Yep.
Yeah, yeah.
Yep, you are standing outside of it right now. Yep.
Yeah, with Colin Coward and his crew. A couple more games in the SEC to talk about, and South Carolina going on the road to Texas A&M. You're right. Good for Coach Beamer and that staff and those kids. They got a dub. Tell me where you think the Texas A&M offense goes from here.
When I look at Texas A&M, Chuck, it's funny. If you watch them early with those two young offensive linemen, the two freshmen and the changes they had to make, whether it was Jameer Johnson coming in from the portal, they struggled to run the ball. You know, they had no balance on offense. And while it's great to have Spiller and A-Chain and all this, if you can't block for them and you got a backup quarterback in there that's one-dimensional, it's tough to score points. And that's what you saw. A&M wasn't just getting stopped. They were getting stopped the same way. I mean, getting shut down on first down and second down on the run. And Calzada was in third and seven. He's not super mobile, so teams were pinning their ears back and going to get him and mixing up coverages on him. And you saw him kind of grow through that. But against Alabama, their offensive line really stepped up. They did it against Missouri last week, even though Missouri's not very good defensively. If they can keep the ability to run the ball, they can have a chance athletically, and that defense has enough good players on it, especially up front with Clemens and Leal and Johnson and those guys, to be able to be in any game. So Texas A&M's scary. They've been scary. They're finding their footing a little bit offensively, and if the run game continues to improve, they're going to become a problem.
Last game I want to ask you about, last team actually, because I don't think Arkansas Pine Bluff is going to be much of a challenge. But the Razorbacks, talk about their quarterback, because outside of, it's KJ Jefferson. Unless your team has played Arkansas, you probably haven't watched. That kid is fabulous. And, I mean, he is a throwback, like, doing it all. It's not just dual threat. He's the best running back on the team. He's the best quarterback on the team. He might be the second-best receiver after Burks. I don't know. Talk about what you've seen from KJ this year and what is quickly turning into a tough season, but he's still performing.
Yeah, you know, I think he's made one of the biggest jumps in the country from his first year. You know, he got some playing time last year. His throwing motion was a little funky. That was a big question I had coming in. Going through a summer in the throwing program into fall camp, you can tell the biggest compliment I can give him is that he's not even close to as good as he's going to be. He still struggles a little bit moving to his right with the intermediate passing game. He's getting better at it. He's got touch on the deep ball. That's something that he's not just a big guy that can throw the fastball like a Joe Milton, even though Joe Milton has overthrown everybody in Tennessee outside of me when I was driving through there a couple weekends ago. But when you look at what KJ Jefferson can do, he is a natural thrower of the ball. He's a good runner. He's a big runner. He's a heavy runner. But he does have touch and he does have feel. And that means he has a lot of room to improve as a passer. I know their season's kind of, you know, gone off a cliff a little bit these last three games, but Sam Pittman's putting together a quality product. You know, they don't look lost up front, and KJ has about as high a ceiling as anybody moving forward.
Who's the next LSU head coach?
Man, I still think it's Lane Kiffin. I think he's got a huge audition this weekend, even though, you know, it's at Ole Miss and not LSU. I think he's interested. I think there's mutual interest. I think there's a fallback for Ole Miss and Jeff Lebby. I think he'd be the guy if Lane did take it. So I'm going to go with that. It's what I heard from the jump, even though typically, and you know this, Chuck, the first guy you hear doesn't normally get it.
Oh, that's absolutely true about that. What he usually gets is a new contract where he is. Jake, I appreciate your time, man. Thank you.
Chuck, anytime. Always an honor to come on, my friend.
All right, the J-Boy Show on Twitter. Follow him there, and you'll hear him ever so often right here on these airways. So, yeah, that's going to be one of those evolving stories as we get through the season. And teams, programs have started moving on to their next coach a little earlier. And we expected this to happen when there was an early signing period, that it was really unusual. If you go back, like, remember what Florida did with Ron Zook? Wasn't it after the Mississippi State game? I think Jarius Norwood broke one off and ran Florida announced, yeah, you're fired, but you can coach at the end of the season. I think that was it. And part of it was because they wanted to get early pursuit on the bell of the ball, which was this guy out yonder, Utah. And we saw North Carolina do that. They moved on from a guy who played there, John Bunting, because they thought Butch was, yeah, well, he was available. And they thought he was going to be the guy. And so he was. And they wanted a little bit of a head start. Well, teams have started doing, our programs started doing that even earlier. We saw LSU and Les Miles. It wasn't so they could get a jump on a head coach. But that was September at a major program. And normally when you have a September firing, it's at more of a fringe or, let's say, emerging program where we're not going to notice or apply any sort of lasting evaluation to it. Like, ooh, what's wrong with LSU? They're firing a coach in September. Because that really shows you what it was about. It was about they lost to Auburn that night. And there was even a replay thing in the clock, and I think they got it correct. But even that thing. So if there's 9/10 of a second left on the clock instead of not, Les Miles would still be your coach? So, it's October, and LSU, which is one of the 11 top five jobs in America, it is open, and whoever is the most accomplished current head coach that is on the move, all right, I would say LSU, absolutely. Maybe Southern Cal, who knows? But I would say LSU. I'd absolutely rather coach even in the SEC West. You know, Alabama and Texas A&M. It's better being head coach at Southern Cal. It really is. So that's me. So whoever it is. And I was asked last week, anybody checked in on Tom Herman? He's around. He's working for the Bears. He watches film. That's all he does. If we go back to the 2019 class in the state of Arkansas, top-ranked player, Hudson Henry, who projects as a tight end, and if you go read everything about it, that's typical. Previous year, four-star. Previous year, four-star. Previous year, five-star. You're in a place like Arkansas, it is all about projecting what that kid's going to turn into. Absolutely 100%. All right, so we're going to take a break. We will come back, wrap up on this Friday next.
To Southern Sports Today and the Chuck Oliver Show.
It's a reality. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, the what I like to say, the blue bloods. The reality is, you know, they're going to have some opportunities. I've been there before and taken advantage of that. And I think that's why you got to have a chance to beat them. And if you don't, it's going to be a difficult situation. It's just, you know, the way college football is in particular. And when you do get those opportunities, you got to perform.
Cincinnati Bearcats head coach Luke Fickell talking to ESPN. Ahead of tomorrow's game in Annapolis versus Navy, and they're going to drop a sack of bricks on Navy tomorrow. That's just how it's going to turn out. Navy is not having a great season. They're 1-5, and they obviously they never have a equitable talent. As far as, you know, projections, recruiting, et cetera, it's just not what it is. It's a totally different deal at the service academies, and they do a really good job based on the parameters that they are thrilled to work with. But it's not only normally a talent disparity that an X's and O's, a scheme, a dedication to a running an offense, not just a formation. And you know the difference between that. That's what they have to be. This year, Navy's not very good, and Cincinnati could be a playoff team. Currently, Bearcats are 6-0, and we talked after the Notre Dame game. If we go back now, 3 weeks ago, Cincinnati started the season, beat Miami of Ohio, and it was comfortable, and it was fine. Next week, beat Murray State. It was comfortable. It was fine. Nobody's paying attention to the Bearcats yet. Not really. They're talking about, yeah, that Desmond Ridder guy. I remember reading about him for the first time before the Georgia game last year, which is when most people read about Desmond Ridder for the first time. Oh, yeah, and they've got a lot of people back, and they do have a lot of people back. But you didn't pay attention because you didn't think there was any reason you had to, and I don't fault you. I'll pick it. The Buffalo Bulls. I did not spend a lot of time drilling down on the Buffalo Bulls this season because I didn't think there was a reason I needed to. Well, it's the same thing. For if you're – and I do this job for a living. I was like, eh. I don't know, if you're a Florida fan, there's no reason for you to care about Cincinnati, not in August. Well, everybody's paying attention now. But you weren't when they beat Murray State, when they beat Miami of Ohio, then they beat Murray State, and it was comfortable enough, and it was a non-conference against an overmatched opponent, and it was just fine, but you weren't paying attention anyway, so it didn't matter. Then they played at Indiana. In Indiana, the Hoosiers have been one of the biggest drop-offs this season. They still play pretty tough, but that team's not going to finish with a good record. So they're at Indiana, and they win, but they got to push themselves. Then they're at Notre Dame, and they win, and they get pushed as well. When they came out of South Bend, we talked that Monday. I was like, folks, the Pretty Points Tour has started in Cincinnati. Whatever the number is, it's going to take a couple of weeks for Vegas to catch up to this. I said, but Cincinnati is on the Pretty Points Tour because they look on their rest of their schedule and they realize not much that will impress the committee as far as the opponent. So we will have to impress the committee with the score. First week following Notre Dame, when they realized, okay, That was our carrot. That was our one. Now we just got to steamroll everybody. So it doesn't really matter who we played. It's just the score. They beat Temple 52-3. Temple's not bad. They're not horrible. Beat them 52-3. UCF, again, not having a great season, but UCF's a talented team, and I think they're well coached, and they're a fine opponent. 56-21. Beat them by 5 touchdowns. Now, the reason I bring that up, UCF has talent. Talent who used to play at Florida and Auburn and all these places. Big-time coach, staff, all good down in Orlando. That is a good squad. Beat them by 35. Do you know how I'm certain Fickell has said, step on the gas. Do you know how I'm certain? I don't, you know, relative scores between teams and opponents and all that, I throw it out. It is an anecdotal thing, but I'm going to tell you the scores just from Cincinnati. Week one, I told you they played Miami of Ohio, a team out of the MAC who's not good. Doesn't compare to Cincinnati in the least. You know how much they beat them by? 35. Week two, Murray State, team out of FCS. You know how much they beat the Racers by? 35. 6 weeks later, they're playing a far superior opponent in UCF. Know how much they beat them by? 35. They're coming up with the same spread versus a much tougher opponent. If you care, Cincinnati is a 4-touchdown pick tomorrow on the road, and they won't have anything to do with crowd, I promise you. It's just not what it is when you go on the road and play Navy. It's great. It's a historical play. Fantastic. Fun place to go. It's not what it is. As far as, like, we're going to waste all of our timeouts because we can't hear at the line of scrimmage. So Cincinnati's going on the road. They are a 4-touchdown favorite. And they're, again, pretty points. The tour is in full effect, man. And so far, all I can say, 2-for-2. What up, Dan?
How funny is it that Cincinnati is the modern-day Virginia Tech? Because let's jump back into the DeLorean. Let's go back to 1999. Remember Virginia Tech? Who is this Frank Beamer guy? Who's this Michael Vick guy? Who is this team? I can't remember the linebacker they had. Corey something. I can't remember his name.
Oh, Moore.
Corey Moore. Oh. Yeah, yeah. I mean, it just that entire team. And then they finally got their shot against Florida State, gave them a game for probably about three quarters. Then Peter Warwick said, yeah, hey, I'm not called the human video game for nothing. It's now my time, and I'm going to show you why it's my time. So we'll go from there. But Cincinnati, that's kind of just the cautionary tale for all the other group of six teams, is to exactly what Luke Fickell is talking about. And I appreciate the fact that he's not taking the tact that, honestly, Chuck, we've seen so many Power 5 coaches take. Jimbo last year, we need to expand the field. This is not right. No, it's kind of like what you say. Don't complain about the rules. Make the rules work for you. Beat Alabama. Win the SEC. Get into the college football playoff. That's how you get the benefit of the doubt, is when you've been there before and you build up some cachet and they know that you are worthy of being there. I appreciate the fact that Luke Fickell says that, because I do think that is the tact you do have to have as a group of six, is, hey, we're not sitting at the same table as them. They're at table one at the banquet. We're right now at table five. Maybe next year we can be at table one, and their chance to jump up to table one was exactly what he talked about with ESPN in that part right there, is he said, you know what, we played Georgia pretty close last year and we showed that we could go toe to toe with them. Now we got to show we can do that again, and we got to beat them.
People always think there's room for one more. That's when you're talking about the head table or table one or even getting invited to the reception. People always think there's room for one more. That is like the most highfalutin thing I've ever heard anybody say. I wasn't invited, by the way, so I was on that other side. So wraps it up for the day. Wraps it up for the week. David, outstanding. Daniel, thank you so much. Everybody listen. All right, couple of days. Let's enjoy it, and we will be back together on Monday talking college football right here on Chuck Oliver Show.